You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, congressional offices are getting a ton of email from constituents, but the technology to handle all those messages is out of date. We'll learn about some possible fixes.
First, a Syrian refugee living in Wisconsin is challenging President Trump's refugee and immigration ban in federal court. The plaintiff, who is remaining anonymous to safeguard his family still in Syria, maintains that the ban violates federal law and is unconstitutional.
Andre Vrabi is an attorney with Holwell, Schuster & Goldberg, LLP in New York. He's representing the Syrian man living in Wisconsin who's filed the suit. Andre, welcome to Central Time.
My pleasure.
Well, tell us about your client. How did he first come to seek asylum here in the United States?
Sure. So my client came roughly 3 years ago, and he was escaping really harrowing conditions in Syria. He's from Aleppo and had been tortured, imprisoned, beaten to the point of hospitalization, had had threats against himself and his wife, particularly one armed group said that they knew who his wife was and would rape her when they found her. And under these conditions, my client came to the United States and immediately requested asylum. And following a vetting process where the United States government satisfied itself that he's not a danger to the United States, that he is who he says he is, he was granted asylum status by an immigration judge in Chicago. And immediately after that, he filed the petition that forms the basis for this particular case, which is a petition for derivative asylum status for his young wife and his three-year-old daughter.
And as we noted, he's remaining anonymous in this case. It may seem obvious, but tell us why it's important that he stay anonymous.
Sure. My client has particularized credible threats from armed groups in Syria that they will find, if not him, his family, and they will do great harm to them. And frankly, the only thing that he wants more than to be reunited with his little girl and with his wife is to make sure that they're safe. And alerting these armed groups to the fact that he's still alive, that he's got asylum status, and that he's in the United States would really jeopardize them. And to that end, the judge in this case, Judge Conley, the chief judge in the Western District of Wisconsin, agreed with us that it would be prudent to permit my client to proceed anonymously, finding that he would be in grave danger, and his wife and young daughter would be in grave danger, should he be required to disclose his identity publicly. That said, we have provided the government with his full name and identifying characteristics such that they would be able to know who the plaintiff is, and the conditions of his petition would be reviewed by the government.
What was the status of his petition to bring his wife and daughter over before this executive ban came into place?
It was pending, and by all accounts, it was moving forward expeditiously. My client, as any other petitioner for derivative asylum, essentially has to provide documentation and to satisfy the U.S. authorities of two things. The first is that the beneficiaries, in this case, his little girl and his wife, are who my client says they are in relation particularly to him as the petitioner. In other words, that this is truly his wife and this is truly his little girl. The second component that my client has to demonstrate is that his beneficiaries are not a threat to the United States or the community here. In other words, that from a security and national security perspective, they're appropriate beneficiaries of the derivative asylum petition. That, too, has been satisfied from what we understand. And his particular petition is actually at the very last part of the process, the ministerial part of the process, And was in that position when President Trump signed the executive order.
And what impact did that executive order then have on this petition?
I mean, you could think of it in terms of a kind of a 3-year marathon for my client. I mean, he escaped terrible conditions, worked tirelessly to get his wife and his son and daughter, sadly his son has already been killed, to the United States. And at the point where he could see the finish line to this marathon, which was January of 2017, this petition ground to a halt. The government has indicated in documents that are publicly available and which we have included in our moving papers for a temporary restraining order in court that it will not be processing these derivative asylum petitions. And even if it does process those derivative asylum petitions, another branch of the government said it will not be issuing visas or travel documents that would permit the beneficiaries of an approved petition, in this case, my client's daughter and his wife, to actually travel to the United States.
We've seen court rulings elsewhere in the country putting a halt, we hear, to this executive order, at least to key parts of it. Does that not affect your client and his family?
That's a very good question. The lack of clarity is very troubling for us. And given this administration's animus and what we think are the true purposes behind the executive order, we thought it was prudent to bring this case to ensure that our clients' rights are protected. Specifically, the broadest injunctive relief that has been granted was from a court in Washington, a district court there. And the court said there is a nationwide ban on particular provisions of the executive order, but it also said that the nationwide ban is at ports of entry. And the documents to which I referred previously that we've seen from the Department of Homeland Security and the State Department indicate to us that the way that the administration intends to interpret this temporary restraining order is to say the government will not apply the executive order at ports of entry, meaning perhaps airports or marine ports, but that doesn't do anything for my client who's already here and has put his petition not in a port of entry, but rather within the United States in the office in, I believe it is Milwaukee, the office in Wisconsin that processes these types of petitions.
We're talking to Andre Vrabi. He's an attorney representing a Syrian refugee living in Wisconsin who's challenging President Donald Trump's refugee and immigration ban. Andre, what are the grounds that you're filing this challenge on?
We're arguing both statutory and constitutional violations. First, on the statutory point, the Immigration and Nationality Act, as it currently stands, was passed by Congress, was amended by Congress, and lays out a framework for immigration into this country. One of the governing principles within that act, and statutorily one of the ones that are found within particular sections of that act, state that it's the federal government's intention to ensure that families of asylum seekers are kept together. In our particular case, that obviously is being frustrated by the executive order. The provision that President Trump read to the press, I believe verbatim, that has to do with the president's right to suspend or block the entry of aliens or classes of aliens into the United States, that's a provision within the INA, was passed in 1952. However, in 1965, Congress amended the INA to ensure that derivative asylees, and refugees generally will not be prohibited from entering the United States based on a policy of discrimination for either their religious beliefs or their nationality. And we argue that the provisions of the executive order clearly violate this limitation that Congress has imposed on the president. Separate and apart from that, of course, are constitutional protections that anyone that resides within the United States is entitled to. Those protections include the First Amendment and the Fifth Amendment, what are sometimes called equal protection, due process, and establishment clause protections. And we've also made arguments, legal arguments, that substantiate our position that our clients' constitutional rights have been violated. In particular, the U.S. Constitution protects what's called a right to family integrity, separate and apart from the provisions of the INA. And through the government's decision or its policy or its failure to act on a valid petition to bring the wife and this little girl over, they have violated that right of our client.
As we wrap up, what are the next steps now in court? What's the timeline for this challenge?
So we've had some great developments recently. The court yesterday issued an order, first continuing to permit us to proceed anonymously and not divulge our client's identity. But even more importantly, the court has allowed has required the federal government within this week, so by the end of this week, Friday, has stated to the federal government that they must answer three basic questions, which really go to the heart of our case. The first one asks, what's the current status of this plaintiff's request for derivative asylum for his wife and daughter? The second one asks, does the United States government intend to continue processing derivative asylum applications for beneficiaries even after the issuance of the executive order? And the third one asks whether the preliminary injunction entered into by the court in Seattle and left in place by the Ninth Circuit thus far applies to derivative asylum petitions for beneficiaries from Syria, which are, of course, the class of people that my client's wife and daughter fall into.
We'll leave it there for now. Andre, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much. You know, I have to say that it's a very sweeping executive order, and I do appreciate the fact that you are letting the public know that there are many different types of individuals that have been targeted here, like my client and his young wife and little daughter, that have nothing to do with terrorism and really are harmed by the executive order.
That's attorney Andre Vrabi representing the Syrian refugee living in Wisconsin who's challenging the president's refugee and immigration ban.